The Speaker of the Nova Scotia House of Assembly grants permission to record the televised proceedings of the legislature for use in schools and for other purposes, such as private study, research, review, or newspaper summary. Television and radio broadcasters may make use of recorded excerpts of the televised proceedings in their news or public affairs programs for the purpose of fair and accurate reports of proceedings. Program material may not be used for political party advertising, election campaigns, or any other politically partisan activity. Program material may not be edited for use in promotional material by any political party or other organization, and may not be used in any edited form that could mislead or misinform an audience or viewer, or which does not present a balanced portrayal of the proceedings in the House. Video program material may only be used with its original audio components, and no other audio material may be added to video material used. Any other commercial use or rebroadcast of these proceedings requires the express written approval of the Speaker.
Children between the ages of 2 and 6 with intellectual disabilities, and whereas a group of dedicated volunteers and 2 therapists have helped these special children focus on developing motor skills, social skills, and becoming team players all through the use of sports. Therefore, be it resolved that the Nova Scotia Legislature congratulates the Active Start Program for its continued dedication with these special children. Mr. Speaker, I request waiver of notice and passage without debate.
There has been a request for waiver. Is it agreed? Agreed. It is agreed. Would all those in favor of the motion please say aye.
Aye.
Contrary minded, nay. Motion is carried. No more notices of motion. We'll now move on to oral questions put by members to ministers. The time is now 8:40, and we'll conclude at 10:10 p.m. The Honourable House Leader for the Official Opposition.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. The Minister of Health has broken a key commitment to rural Nova Scotia and Cape Breton. In February, when asked about his plan to merge district health authorities, the Minister of Health told Nova Scotians this will not be a Halifax-based board. I'll table the document that says that. But just last month, media reported the new operational board will be in the Halifax area. I'll table that as well. So how can rural Nova Scotians and Cape Bretoners trust the Minister of Health to ensure that their needs are met when he has already broken such an important promise?
The Honourable Minister of Health.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and I thank the member opposite for the question. In terms of a Halifax-based board, we've obviously have to be somewhere physically, but the board will be made up of representatives from across Nova Scotia. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
The Honourable Member for Argyle-Barrington on his first supplementary.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. I think the Minister even mused that it was probably be based in Truro. So I know it's funny how things change over time. Rural Nova Scotians are highly concerned about the Liberal government's incompetent handling of the health authority merger. More to the point, they're very concerned about the fact that Nova Scotians living in Cape Breton and rural parts of the province will not have a say in healthcare delivery. Thanks to the Premier and his Minister of Health, it now appears that important healthcare decisions impacting rural Nova Scotians can now be made by bureaucrats right here in Halifax. What will it take for the Minister of Health and Wellness to understand that healthcare needs in Cape Breton and the rest of Nova Scotia are different from those here in Halifax? And that when he takes the steps to ensure the residents outside of the capital region that their health needs will not be ignored.
The Honourable Minister of Health.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. And what the member opposite and all Nova Scotians need to know and realize is that while you may physically have an office, this board is going to be meeting throughout the province. It's going to be a highly integrated structure, as we will see in just a couple of weeks' time. And what we have done in this bill, if the former Minister of Health had looked real closely, he would see that community health boards will have the most prominent place of any community health boards in Canada. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
The Honourable Member for Argyle Barrington on his final supplementary.
All I saw in that bill, Mr. Speaker, is lack of detail, with no information telling Nova Scotians where the decisions are going to be made. Matter of fact, when we asked the questions of what the org chart was going to look like, it was going to be, well, that's to come sometimes later on. So how can we stand in this House and consider a bill when we really don't know the important information of how rural health care is going to be delivered in the province of Nova Scotia? My question, when will the Minister tell the Premier to abandon the heavy-handed tactics and work with the opposition to ensure that rural Nova Scotians' views are adequately represented in the health care system?
The Honourable Minister of Health.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. And there's one guarantee about this piece of legislation and the new merger, is that all parts of the province will be represented. In fact, the nine districts will have a representative. The old nine districts will have a representative for continuity on the governance board. We will have, again, we'll have zone-based areas that will be integrated. The community health boards will have a direct link of feedback to the provincial board. I can guarantee the former minister that rural Nova Scotia will benefit from this merger. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
The Honourable Leader of the New Democratic Party.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, my question for you is to the Premier. Mr. Speaker, the government is making the most significant restructuring of our health care system that we've seen in 14 years. Mr. Speaker, quite possibly not one family in Nova Scotia from Yarmouth to Cape Breton won't be affected by this restructuring, Mr. Speaker, at some point in the future. Yet this Premier and this government have provided no plan, and they're in a rush to move ahead at lightning speed with very little attention or accountability to what is implicated for our health care system. So, Mr. Speaker, my question to the Premier is this. Why is the Premier in such a rush to avoid scrutiny of his plan to reorganize our health care system?
The Honourable Premier.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, in the last election campaign, this party ran on breaking down the walls inside of the health care system in this province, Mr. Speaker, and we are delivering on that commitment now.
The Honourable Leader of the New Democratic Party on her first supplementary.
Well, Mr. Speaker, if I was a suspicious person, I might think that the Premier's unprecedented attack on health care workers was a diversion to keep people's attention away from the fact that the government, in fact, has much in store for a restructured healthcare system, Mr. Speaker. So I'd like to ask the Premier again, why has the Premier created an unnecessary crisis in labour relations in our province to avoid the proper scrutiny of health board amalgamation that is going to occur?
The Honourable Premier.
Mr. Speaker, we ran on a platform, Mr. Speaker, of tearing down the walls, of amalgamating district health authorities, Mr. Speaker. And the Honourable Member knows, Mr. Speaker, that the former Finance Minister actually told her government, Mr. Speaker, they should be moving forward to streamlining the health care system in this province, which she ignored.
The Honourable Leader of the New Democratic Party on her final supplementary.
Well, thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, the government has dismissed the volunteer district health authority boards from communities from Cape Breton to Yarmouth. They have replaced the management of our health care system with a one-person board who is accountable to no one but the Minister of Health. And there's not a community representative to be found in the restructuring that is going on around the healthcare system, yet we see this plan race through this assembly, Mr. Speaker. So my question to the Premier is this. Why does he think it's okay to avoid community voices while they come up with a plan of what a new health care system will be like for Nova Scotians, Mr. Speaker.
The Honourable Premier.
Mr. Speaker, I'd like to remind the Honourable Member, Mr. Speaker, that the Minister of Health has been travelling this province, doing a fantastic job on behalf of the people of this province, speaking, talking to health care workers, Mr. Speaker, community leaders, people who sat on district health authorities, Mr. Speaker, and we are now moving forward with the commitment that we made to Nova Scotia to tear down the walls inside of our health care system.
The Honourable Leader of the Official Opposition.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. My question is to the Premier. Mr. Speaker, not only do we face a changing story about where this new health authority will be located and changing stories about what's in store for health care workers, we continue to face a changing story from the government about how much this change will save, if anything. Mr. Speaker, the Liberal platform that the Premier just referred to promised Nova Scotians $13 million in savings from all of these changes. Last week, the health minister said, well, it's actually only $5 million. And then yesterday, it changed again to be a million-ish, Mr. Speaker, which, by the way, is it's hard to keep track of all the changes, Mr. Speaker, but that's 1/2,000th of the entire District Health Authority budget. And all of those savings, whatever they may be, he attributes solely to the changes in the CEO and VP level, Mr. Speaker. I mean, there's no change from any of the other plans for our health authorities. Mr. Speaker, how can Nova Scotians believe the government is going to make this merger work when they don't even know for themselves what they're doing?
The Honourable Premier.
Mr. Speaker, I completely disagree with the premise of the question.
The Honourable Leader of the Official Opposition on his first supplementary.
Well, Mr. Speaker, if that answer was meant to assure Nova Scotians they do have a clue what they're doing, it failed because it just proves the point that they're making it up as they go along. Mr. Speaker, the Premier tells Nova Scotians there will be savings from all of these changes that will go back to health. But he tells health care workers not to worry, there'll be no changes for them, that their benefits and their salaries and their pensions will all stay the same, Mr. Speaker. Both of those statements can't be true at the same time. So I'll ask the Premier, how much does he plan to save from these changes, or is this just another expensive Liberal shell game?
The Honourable Premier.
Mr. Speaker, not only will we save millions of dollars, Mr. Speaker, we will cause efficiencies to allow Nova Scotia to have access to health care. And let me assure every health care worker in this province, the benefits that they've earned will not change.
The Honourable Leader of the Official Opposition on his final supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, the Premier will have to forgive health care workers if they don't take that to the bank, because last spring he told them that he was preserving their right to strike, Mr. Speaker. And yet at the same time, he tells Nova Scotians that he stopped strikes in health care, Mr.
Order,
Speaker.
Order, please. The Honourable Leader of the Official Opposition has the floor.
Both of those statements also can't be true at the same time, Mr. Speaker. So I'd like to ask the Premier, why can't he give Nova Scotians and health care workers the same story?
The Honourable Premier.
Coming from that member, Mr. Speaker, that is laughable, quite frankly. The man flip-flops more times than Mr. Speaker, I don't know what. Fact of the matter is, we brought in essential service legislation that ensures that health care will be provided in communities across this province at the same time, protecting health care workers' right to strike, Mr. Speaker. Read the bill. I don't know how we can find that difficult to understand.
The Honourable Leader of the Official Opposition.
Mr. Speaker, that is pretty rich coming from the leader of the Liberal Party, a lecture on how to stay consistent. Here is a way to be consistent, Mr. Speaker. I read his letter that he put in print to the nurses of Nova Scotia before the last election. I saw the ads that he ran assuring nurses nothing would change before the last election, Mr. Speaker. Here is how you be consistent. Say the same thing after the election as you were saying before the election, Mr. Speaker. That's how you earn the respect of the people of Nova Scotia. Now, changing gears, Mr. Speaker, I do want to ask the Premier a question about fracking. Mr. Speaker, the throne speech assured Nova Scotians that the government was going to encourage onshore gas exploration by creating an onshore energy atlas. And yet the Liberals are banning the actual development of shale gas resources in our province. That's why, Mr. Speaker, Barbara Pike, the CEO of the Maritimes Energy Association, said that does not send a good message to anyone who's looking to invest in Nova Scotia. My question, how does the government expect anyone to ever actually do research or testing in our province when they've banned the actual development of the resource?
The Honourable Premier.
Mr. Speaker, Shell will announce a $1 billion investment. Mr. Speaker, BP's announcing a $1 billion investment off our shore. We will see rigs go off the coast of our province drilling for oil, Mr. Speaker. All of that is being driven by an investment that was made by the McDonald government, quite frankly, that ensured that we mapped the ocean floor to understand the geology that was there, ensuring that we knew where companies could drill. Same thing is happening on shore, Mr. Speaker. That's what we're going to continue to do. If the resource is here, Mr. Speaker, we'll then have a full and open conversation about how do we treat it.
The Honourable Leader of the Official Opposition.
Mr. Speaker, of course, the difference is there's no ban on offshore drilling, testing, exploration, or development. There is now going to be a ban on onshore drilling. Quite frankly, Mr. Speaker, Nova Scotians deserve offshore jobs and onshore jobs, not just one instead of the other. The government has banned high-volume fracking, but they don't even know what the definition of high-volume fracking is. Well, we just had a group of experts travel the province, consult with Nova Scotians, and produce a very helpful report on how we can go slow but go on shale gas development. So I'd like to ask the Premier, will he consult with his own hydraulic fracturing review panel led by Dr. Wheeler to get their expert advice on high-volume fracking?
The Honourable Premier.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, we're doing exactly what the committee said, which was continue to do research, understand, Mr. Speaker, where the possibilities are actually for shale gas on land, Mr. Speaker. No one actually even knows if we have shale gas, which is so to go down the road of dividing communities over a commodity that we may not even have absolutely makes no sense. What the committee said was understand, ensure that we went around, did more research and development at the same time, Mr. Speaker, continue to have a conversation with communities. The bill that's before this House does just that.
The Honourable Leader of the Official Opposition on his final supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, the government is doing the opposite of what the Wheeler Commission recommended because they said specifically that they did not support an ongoing moratorium or any other political development that stopped the exploration or development of shale gas. Mr. Speaker, the government spent over $100,000 on this report, and then they ignore it. Ray Ritzy, a member of the Wheeler panel, wrote, and I quote, "Good regulations in Alberta, British Columbia, Saskatchewan, New Brunswick have guided the safe drillings of hundreds of thousands of wells. But rather than work to develop those safe regulations here, the Premier has seen fit to ban the opportunity altogether." So I'll ask the Premier, Mr. Speaker, why has his government decided to ignore their own experts and simply ban one of the few new ways to create jobs in Nova Scotia?
The Honourable Premier.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, we actually listened to the panel, Mr. Speaker. We've invested and continue to invest in research and development to understand the geology of Nova Scotia to ensure that if we actually do have that resource and where that may be, what are the possibilities? At the same time, we're continuing to look at new technologies of drilling and how do you extract that resource if it actually is there, Mr. Speaker. And this bill provides to have a conversation with Nova Scotians if that's the way we head.
The Honourable Member for Sackville-Cobequid.
That's six. I don't know if he needs more, but Mr. Speaker, my question is for the Minister of Health. Since last Friday, the Minister of Health has made four contradictory public statements about the union's offer to keep their members with a foreign bargaining association. Last Thursday, he said he had rejected the offer and the government would select which unions healthcare workers would belong to. On Friday, the story changed, the minister telling media an arbitrator, not the government, would decide which union workers would belong to. On Monday, it came as a surprise when the minister announced that perhaps he would be open to the unions forming bargaining associations, negating the need for an arbitrator. Then today, Mr. Speaker, a new twist. The minister's telling reporters an arbitrator would decide the union fate, but perhaps that fate could be a bargaining association the unions are asking for. If you had a hard time following that, Mr. Speaker, you're not alone. Mr. Speaker, these contradictions have led to a great deal of confusion and upheaval in our healthcare sector. So I'd like to ask the Minister of Health, can he please tell this House once and for all, on the record, if the possibility of a union keeping their members while forming bargaining association is still on the table?
The Honourable Minister of Health.
Well, thank you very much, Mr. Speaker, and I thank the member for Sackville for the question. And what we need to be taking a look at here is that as after the bill passes through the House, a mediator is going to be open to whatever options that are brought forward, and that certainly remains to be seen. I do want to correct the member opposite that it will be a mediator, not an arbitrator.
The Honourable Member for Sackville Cobequid on his first supplementary.
That's crystal clear now. I'm glad he clarified, Mr. Speaker. Yesterday, the heads of the healthcare unions waited patiently at Province House, hoping to meet with the Minister of Health. Specifically, the union leaders wanted to ask the Minister why he told the media he was open to accepting something similar to the bargaining association model that they proposed, when previously in a private meeting he had clearly rejected that offer, Mr. Speaker. So I'd like to ask the Minister, since the Minister of Health was not available to explain his discrepancy to the union leaders yesterday, can he at least tell this House how that discrepancy occurred in the first place?
The Honourable Minister of Health.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. And what I want to convey to the member opposite and all the House is that what I said is simply a possibility for unions to bring to the mediator when that process takes place.
The Honourable Member for Sackville Cobequid on his final supplementary.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. This summer, Nova Scotia's healthcare unions worked together and developed the plan to allow them to keep their members while still achieving the Liberal government's objective to have four bargaining units in the healthcare sector. So my question for the Minister of Health is this. Why is it so crucial to the Liberal government that an arbitrator or a mediator and not the healthcare workers themselves determine union membership?
The Honourable Minister of Health.
Well, thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. I think if we take a look at where we go to work in Nova Scotia, as I did some 30-odd years ago, I had no choice in what union that would represent me.
The Honourable Member for Sackville Cobequid.
Cold comfort, Mr. Speaker, cold comfort to those healthcare workers here in Nova Scotia. My question now, new question, Mr. Speaker, through you is to the Minister of Health. Mr. Speaker, the Minister of Health has said the Liberals have consulted extensively with a wide range of Nova Scotians on the reorganization in the healthcare system. On June 3, 2014, the Minister released a report on some very vague statement about what they heard. So I'd like to ask the Minister of Health, can he tell Nova Scotians who he consulted with, when he consulted with them, and how he consulted them?
The Honourable Minister of Health.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. And I guess I could give a very long answer here because I spent a great deal of January, February, March into April having an opportunity to meet with many frontline healthcare workers, community health boards, and we had open meetings where citizens could come in, express their views on any concern they had about the merger. There was one overwhelming theme that came through all of the consultations, and that was change is necessary in our healthcare system. We have way too many barriers that currently impede efficiencies within the healthcare system, and this bill directs how the healthcare delivery system will be for the future starting April 1st, 2015.
The Honourable Member for Sackville Cobequid on his first supplementary.
They're anticipating my next question, Mr. Speaker. I appreciate it. Through the Freedom of Information Act, we obtained a copy of a bill for $8,594 for the minister's travel team. Other than the odd press release announcing a meeting with the now defunct health boards, the minister didn't hold any open or public meetings for citizens to provide feedback on their scheme, Mr. Speaker. We did, however, receive information that it cost taxpayers $36,000 to do polling and focus groups. It's a bit of a stretch, Mr. Speaker, to say that the Liberals have done extensive consultation when all they've done is some polling and focus groups, Mr. Speaker. So I would like to ask the minister, when will the minister tell the House whether or not he believes that focus groups and polling are considered meaningful consultation?
The Honourable Minister of Health.
Well, thank you very much, Mr. Speaker, and I thank the member for Sackville for the question. One of the great feedbacks that you get today when you start a process of merging the health boards is that you get submissions from many, many Nova Scotians. I get a tremendous number of emails that are both questioning, offering suggestions, and talking about, in fact, from a tremendous number of people who have worked in the healthcare system for many years on the fact that we not only need change, we need to make the system more efficient. Can you imagine, and I was surprised that the previous health minister or health ministers from the previous government hadn't at least had a consistent way of reporting adverse medical incidents when we had six different ways across Nova Scotia. This will not happen in the future.
The Honourable Member for Sackville-Cobequid on his final supplementary.
Well, Mr. Speaker, we know what will happen in the future is that they'll continue to block the access of Nova Scotians to tell this government what they think about pieces of legislation like we've seen in law amendments today, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, we're facing some of the most extensive changes to our health care system in over 15 years. And the Liberals shut down the only public way to share Nova Scotia, or the public can share their views, as I mentioned earlier, in law amendments, Mr. Speaker. On top of it all, we have no information because the Liberals refuse to tell Nova Scotians any details about their amalgamation scheme, Mr. Speaker. When will the minister commit to public and broad consultation that will give Nova Scotians a say on the Liberal health scheme, Mr. Speaker?
The Honourable Minister of Health.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. And the one thing that I had embedded, if you wish, from Nova Scotians as I went across the province is that we need change, and we need to do it through the merger, through the consolidation. The time for doing consultation is over. What I'm very, 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 very proud of in terms of putting together the team of people who will guide and direct the merger, and all of the information gathered to date has been done by Nova Scotians, and we have a Nova Scotia product that we'll be proud of from one end of the province to the other.
The Honourable Member for Pictou West.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. My question is for the Minister of Municipal Affairs. Rhonda Frank, who I introduced earlier, of East Chesacook, ran a home-based business teaching children art classes. Her business was called Artsy Fartsy Art. But in June, government's red tape shut Rhonda's business down, despite the fact that there is another approved business on her lane. The Department of Transportation refused to approve the lane for Rhonda's business. My question is, why is Up and Over Lane approved for one business but prohibits for a neighbouring business?
The Honourable Minister of Service, Nova Scotia Municipal Affairs.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and thank you for the question from my colleague. Mr. Speaker, I'm not familiar with the specific circumstances that my colleague has referred to, but I'd be more than happy to explore the circumstances she had shared and follow through within the department.
The Honourable Member for Pictou West on her first supplementary.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. And with all due respect to the Minister, I find it a little uneasy to not believe that he doesn't know about this. It's been in the media. So I will continue on with my questions if you do want to pass them on to maybe another minister that may want to answer the questions. In the last year, 9,000 jobs disappeared in Nova Scotia. Sadly, Rhonda's was one of them. In the recent speech from the throne, the government failed to provide a job strategy. And when it comes to Rhonda's business, the strategy seems to be due to reduce jobs in the province. My question, at a time when Nova Scotians are desperate to provide for their families and moving to other provinces, why is this government smothering the business people's spirit and killing businesses in East Chesapeake?
The Honourable Minister of Service, Nova Scotia Municipal Affairs.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'm surprised and disappointed at the same time in the comments of my colleague, in that we've worked extensively through my colleague's constituency office to provide extensive support on a number of issues in her riding, and we'll continue to do that. As I indicated earlier, I'm not privy to the specifics that my colleague has shared. I'm more than willing to continue to work with her to find solutions and understand the issues that she's referenced.
The Honourable Member for Pictou West.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker, and I thank the Minister, and it's true. His statement is very true. He has worked very hard with me to do a lot of my constituency, and I thank him for that. And I thank him for willing to meet, perhaps later on, in the lobby with Rhonda and her husband Matthew with regards to this situation. So thank you. Rhonda Frank wants to offer a needed service to her community. She wants to play by the rules, and she wants her business to be treated the same way her neighbor's business has been treated. The question, will the minister do the right thing, loosen the government red tape, and let Rhonda reopen her business? Thank you.
The Honourable Minister of Municipal Affairs.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'd be more than pleased to meet with my colleague and the individual she has referenced following discussions this evening.
The Honourable Leader of the New Democratic Party.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, my question through you is to the Premier. Mr. Speaker, over the past few days, there have been many letters and phone calls into our MLA offices, coming in primarily from frontline healthcare workers who are very concerned about the government's DHA scheme. And some of these workers are openly talking about leaving Nova Scotia. Mr. Speaker, we all know this is a poorly planned scheme filled with unknown consequences, and it's no wonder. Feeling under attack, many healthcare workers are wondering what's in store for them in terms of their future. So, Mr. Speaker, I want to ask the Premier, how will driving healthcare workers out of the province improve our healthcare system?
The Honourable Premier.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I want to thank the Honourable Member for the question. Mr. Speaker, what's happening in this province, Mr. Speaker, is that we're actually hiring more healthcare workers. And again, I want to tell every healthcare worker across this province the benefits that they have earned, Mr. Speaker, will remain.
The Honourable Leader of the New Democratic Party on her first supplementary.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, after Bill 37 and the poison relations that this government developed with nurses that were overworked and understaffed, it's no wonder they were forced to hire more nurses in the province of Nova Scotia, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, in the Law Amendments Committee, we heard from a nurse whose name is Robin, and she recently moved home to Nova Scotia to take up a full-time nursing job here in Halifax. And she told members of the Law Amendments Committee that she's having second thoughts now about that decision, and she may in fact leave the province again because this government insists on violating her rights as a healthcare worker. So, Mr. Speaker, my question to the Premier is this. What does the Premier have to say to Robin that will make her change her mind and stay here at home in Nova Scotia?
The Honourable Premier.
Mr. Speaker, it wasn't Bill 37 that allowed this government to hire more nurses, Mr. Speaker, and exactly what I would tell Robin and every other nurse in this province. Unlike the previous government who would not listen to their cry from the floors across this province, Mr. Speaker, this government listened and provided more support so that they could deliver frontline services to patients in this province. Mr. Speaker.
Honourable Leader of the New Democratic Party on her final supplementary.
Well, Mr. Speaker, I'm proud of the time that I served as Minister of Health and this member served as Minister of Health. And during that time,
order, please. The Honourable Leader of the New Democratic Party has the floor.
Mr. Speaker, during the time of the NDP government, there never was a demonstration by nurses and health care workers over there in that chamber threatening to leave the province of Nova Scotia, Mr. Speaker, and he should be ashamed. Mr. Speaker, my final question to the Premier is this. Robin is here in the gallery, Mr. Speaker, and I know she'd be very open to talk to the Premier. And so my question is this. Will the Premier meet with her after question period tonight to discuss why she might have to leave Nova Scotia and find work as a nurse somewhere else?
Honourable Premier.
Mr. Speaker, I want to congratulate and welcome Robin to Nova Scotia, congratulate her on her appointment, Mr. Speaker. And the reason, Mr. Speaker, there was no demonstrations under the last administration, Mr. Speaker, because when the Cabinet made a decision, they just went to the seventh floor and it got changed.
Honourable Opposition House Leader.
I know. It's quite an answer. So, some of it was true. I don't know. I don't know where I am today. This Nova Scotians are beginning to raise concerns about the competency of members of this cabinet. The Minister of Community Services, Culture and Heritage has been stripped of responsibility regarding the Blue Nose 2. The Minister of Labour has revealed she wasn't even briefed on one of the most important pieces of labour legislation that this province has seen in years. And yesterday and today, the Minister of Health went missing for hours on end. So my question to the Premier, does the Premier share in concerns being expressed about the competency of his cabinet? And if not, why won't he just let them do their jobs?
The Honourable Premier.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'm absolutely thrilled when I travel this province, Mr. Speaker. Nova Scotians congratulate me on the great quality, Mr. Speaker, of the cabinet that we have appointed, Mr. Speaker. Unlike former ministers who would sit in this house, Mr. Speaker, our ministers are actually in their offices working on behalf of Nova Scotians.
The Honourable Opposition House Leader on his first supplementary.
When the Minister of Community Services was fending off questions regarding her questionable appointments to the Status of Women's Advisory Panel, the Premier took the calls. When the Minister of Natural Resources was questioned about his place, in this place, about taxpayers-funded getaway with the member for King South, the Premier, his right-hand man, the government House Leader, jumped to his feet to answer the questions. And when the hard questions started coming, once again, it was the government House Leader taking the heat, because the Minister of Health had to, quote-unquote, deal with some matters relating to his department. And I will table that as well. So my question to the Premier, why doesn't the Premier have enough confidence in his members of his own cabinet to let them speak on their own issues?
The Honourable Premier.
Mr. Speaker, I'm absolutely thrilled at the quality of the men and women who are in this cabinet. They're a great reflection of Nova Scotians, and I'm very proud of the work that they're doing on behalf of all of Nova Scotia.
The Honourable Opposition House Leader on his final supplementary.
If Nova Scotians can't hear from their ministers, they should be at least informed of what kind of work that they're working on. Yesterday, the government House leader told us the Minister of Health wasn't available to discuss his legislation. The biggest health bill to come before this House and before the province in years and years, if not decades, because he was busy dealing with departmental issues. It must have been something pretty important to the significance of Nova Scotians. So my question to the Premier, will he inform the House to what matters the Minister of Health has been dealing with that are so concerning to Nova Scotians that he avoided that topic of health reform all day long?
The Honourable Premier.
Mr. Speaker, the Minister was available to the media, Mr. Speaker, Mr. But I do want to say at the beginning of the question, he's criticizing the fact that we don't let them do anything. And now, Mr. Speaker, he's asking me to meddle in what they've been doing. So, Mr. Speaker, what does he want?
The Honourable House Leader for the New Democratic Party.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, my question is for the Minister of Labour. Mr. Speaker, in this House yesterday, the Minister of Labour explained to us that the Minister was not responsible for the most sweeping and controversial piece of Labour's legislation this province has seen in decades. So I've got a simple question to the Minister, then, through you, Mr. Speaker. If she is no longer in charge of Labour relations for the province, then who is?
The Honourable Minister of Labour.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and I thank the Honourable Member for the question. As the Minister of Labour, I respect the principles of collective bargaining. It's also my role to ensure that bargaining unfolds in a way that doesn't negatively affect the health and safety of Nova Scotians and is done in a way that is efficient and effective.
The Honourable House Leader for the New Democratic Party on his first supplementary.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'd like to thank the Minister for the non-answer. You'd think with that type of rhetoric coming from the Liberal benches, Mr. Speaker, that we've never had a union merger before, Mr. Speaker. The fact is that the Labour Act already includes provisions that outline how a union mergers can take place in Nova Scotia under Section 31 of the Trade Union Act. The way the government can be sure the legislation will hold up to any charter challenge, Mr. Speaker. So I guess my question to the Minister of Labour, who in her department then, on this vital piece of legislation, who in her department advised the Department of Health that the Minister can be the one that would pick arbitrators in labour disputes?
The Honourable Minister of Labour.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. The Minister of Health has been leading our reform, and that's what this bill is about. I think I made it clear by my past behaviour that I don't shy away from controversial legislation, Mr. Speaker, and it makes sense in this particular case to have the Minister of Health be the lead on this file. Thank you.
The Honourable House Leader for the New Democratic Party on his final supplementary.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Well, you know, whether she thinks or doesn't think that she shies away, the reality is that this is an unprecedented piece of legislation where you would provide for the appointment of mediators and arbitrators out of the Department of Health and not where it usually sits with the Department of Labour through Section 31, where the board would choose such things. But apparently that this minister is quite happy to abdicate her role as minister to the Minister of Health. So my question, Minister, Minister of Health wasn't able to talk to the union leaders yesterday. Why didn't she take it upon herself then to take the lead and talk to those union leaders about associated bargaining?
The Honourable Minister of Labour.
Speaker, I find it pretty rich. His government ran their labour negotiations out of one government place. And it was the boys in short pants that were making the decisions, not their cabinet and not their caucus. I'm not taking any license.
The Honourable Member for Pictou East.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. My question today is for the Minister of Community Services. The Liberal government recently cancelled the third phase of the Riverview Adult Residential Centre reservation project after two phases were complete. The contractor has a signed contract. The workers are on the grounds. Many of the materials were on site, ready to begin construction of phase three. Despite that, the Minister of Community Services scrapped the project. So my question to the Minister is, how much has it cost taxpayers for the government to pull the plug on Phase 3 of the Riverview project at this late stage?
The Honourable Minister of Community Services.
Thank the Honourable Member for that question. Phase 3, and in fact the first two phases, were implemented back in 2008 when the project started. Back in 2008, the roadmap for transformation for persons with disability didn't exist. It didn't exist in people's minds. It certainly didn't exist on paper. So when the previous government, through my predecessor, sat down with community and worked on that amazing piece of document, which will eventually become into legislation, we had to start looking at the different construction phases that were happening through the large institutionalized care facilities in Nova Scotia. It does not make sense to build more institutionalized care when we're moving to a model that actually puts people into the community so that they have choice directed, they have the ability in line with the self-directed care that they would want, which is very much in line with the United Nations Persons with Disabilities Act. So canceling it really did stop 32 beds. The actual construction of that phase three will still finish, but I have said repeatedly under this minister, there will not be one more institutionalized bed built in the province of Nova Scotia due to that roadmap, which we have adhered to every step of the way.
The Honourable Member for Pictou East on his first supplementary.
I thank the minister for her response. I won't say answer, but I think what we're hearing is that the new government has a new plan. And the sad part of that, Mr. Speaker, is when you have a project that's over half done, you finish it. You finish what you started. And the problem is we all know in this House that when you break a contract, there's a penalty. When you order custom materials that cost hundreds of thousands of dollars that you now can't use because you're abandoning a project, at some point, Mr. Speaker, you pass a tipping point, you do what's right, you finish the project, you use the asset in a way that's effective for the taxpayers of Nova Scotia. So I will ask the question again. I don't know that the cost matters to the minister, but I know it matters to Nova Scotians. So I will ask. We're paying cancellation fees. We've purchased useless equipment. How much does it cost the taxpayers of Nova Scotia to cancel the contract, abandon the project, and throw away the equipment?
The Honourable Minister of Community Services.
Mr. Speaker, I have begged the member opposite to actually read the roadmap and to know that we're in a situation in this province where building more institutionalized care beds is truly unsustainable. And, Mr. Speaker, not only is it unsustainable for the Nova Scotia taxpayer, it's not the right thing to do. We are doing the right thing by not adding any more beds to this province. I invite the colleague across the floor to read the roadmap and to tell the families of people who want their loved ones with intellectual and physical disabilities how much it's worth. You tell them. You put a cost on it.
The Honourable Member for Pictou East on his final supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, thank you very much. The issue at hand is, you have a project that's over half finished, you finish it, then you have an asset for the province of Nova Scotia. By walking away from this, you're walking away from money, you have no asset. If you finish the asset, you can change the use case all you want, and I'll support you in that. But to not finish the asset and to walk away is a waste of taxpayers' money. And every member in this House can sit here right now and think of two or three constituents that's been told, no, we don't have the money from this department. This is millions of dollars wasted. I can think of Roots for Youth and Summer Street. So it may not matter to the minister. The roadmap has no money to implement it. But, Mr. Speaker, this minister has decided to pay over $1 million to walk away from this. I think that's a shame for the people of Nova Scotia. It's the wrong thing to do. I wish she'd reconsider.
Honourable Minister of Community Services.
I absolutely won't reconsider to build a wing of an institutionalized care facility in Nova Scotia that's going to remain empty. You may want to govern that way, but we're not going to.
The Honourable Member for Sackville-Cobequid.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. My question is for the Minister of Health. Earlier this spring, the NDP requested and received information from the Department of Health that indicated the department had identified various district health authorities' amalgamation costing categories, Mr. Speaker, and I'll table that, that chart that we received. When I asked the minister what his budget was 6 months ago for the district health authority amalgamation, he either didn't know at the time or didn't want to say. Well, Mr. Speaker, I'm back again with the very same question. So I'd like to ask the Minister of Health, what is the budget for the district health authorities' amalgamation?
The Honourable Minister of Health.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker, and it's an important question a member opposite asks. As the former minister knows, that from FOIPOP information, we've actually been able to do most of the work in-house, meaning in the Department of Health and Wellness, for the transition team and for all of the costs associated with the merger to date. Even with the first phase of SAP, which will of course bring together the accounting platform for the province, all of that is actually within the budget of the Health Department to be able to execute this year, which, as the former minister knows, was part of shared services that they, in fact, brought into play in 2012, and that process continues.
The Honourable Member for Sackville-Cobequid on his first supplementary.
We still didn't get a figure from him, or I haven't got a figure from him, Mr. Speaker. But his answer, I do have some concerns with. He mentioned because I should know some information because of FOIPOP information that we received. That's the concern we have. Nova Scotians want to know. The Premier stood up prior to being the Premier saying that they would be the most transparent government in, I think he said, in Canada or ever. So that's where I'm concerned. We had to ask for that information to be given to our caucus to try to find out how much this amalgamation is going to cost taxpayers, how much money is going to be diverted from frontline health care to go to the amalgamation. So, Mr. Speaker, there is no question there's a cost associated with the District Health Authority's amalgamation. According to the Minister of Finance, at our most recent budget update, there is also funding allocated for the amalgamation in this year's budget. So I'll ask the minister again, how much money is the government budgeting for the District Health Authority's amalgamation?
The Honourable Minister of Health.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. And what the member opposite needs to know is that within the healthcare operational budget this year, a small amount of, I guess, of that budget is going to work on the merger. But really, I believe what the member opposite is really asking or wants to know is that at a minimum, in the first year of operation, 2015-16, we will save a minimum of $5 million.
The Honourable Member for Sackville-Cobequid on his final supplementary.
This might be cynical, Mr. Speaker, but I don't believe him. I do not believe him. Because history has dictated across this province, provincial governments that have done this, they haven't seen those savings, Mr. Speaker. So with all due respect, I don't believe that is going to be true here in Nova Scotia. I hope that the amount of money being spent by security this over the last 2 days is included in the amalgamation of the district health authorities dealing with Bill number one, Mr. Speaker, because I haven't seen in the 11 years that I've been here the amount of security and additional personnel in the grounds of this legislature, Mr. Speaker. So I would like to ask the minister, will the minister provide a detailed budget of all costs associated with the restructuring and put it online, not just for me, Mr. Speaker, but for all Nova Scotians, to see the true cost of what this amalgamation of the district health authorities is going to cost?
The Honourable Minister of Health.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. And that's a very fair question, and I respect the former Minister of Health. And at the end of the fiscal year, we will be able to identify how much was spent in 2014-15 fiscal year, and we will indeed put that online.
The Honourable Member for Pictou West.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. My question through you is for the Minister of Agriculture. Gordon Fraser has been processing turkeys successfully for 36 years without an issue. So people across Pictou County and beyond were shocked when Gordon's operation was abruptly shut down in early September. The difficulty with the shutdown of Gordon Fraser's turkey processing operation is under a previous government in the 1990s, a senior government official gave him approval to keep processing meat and poultry on his premises because the government recognized the need for small processing communities, in small communities, and I'll table that document. My question for the minister is, why are Gordon and other small processing facilities being targeted and shut down?
The Honourable Minister of Agriculture.
I'd like to clarify that that individual, and I won't comment on that particular case, hasn't been shut down. Turkey farmers of Nova Scotia under the Act have the authority to stop processing of turkeys and on-licensed facilities, and that gentleman operates a non-licensed facility.
The Honourable Member for Pictou West on her first supplementary.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. The Deputy Warden of Antigonish County, Owen McCarron, along with Pictou Municipal Councillor Chester Dewar, are very concerned about the impact such closures are having on small local feed stores and businesses, and I'll table that document. Rural small businesses are the engine of many rural Nova Scotian communities. Unnecessary government red tape prevents businesses from growing and creating jobs. Will the minister sit down with Nova Scotia's small turkey processors to reach a compromise that satisfies public safety concerns and allows processors to keep operating?
The Honourable Minister of Agriculture.
Thank you very much. And indeed, we have offered to work with the gentleman in question and anyone else that's processing meat in the province to get them qualified under the provincial system, or if indeed they want to go as far as the federal system, we will work with them. There's no charge for that, but they have to approach us first, and that hasn't happened.
The Honourable Member for Pictou West on her final supplementary.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Butchers like Gordon Fraser process a small number of turkeys each year. The way he does business is much different from processors who butcher thousands and thousands of birds each year. Will the minister admit the regulations that govern large meat processing facilities may not be appropriate for smaller operations like Gordon Fraser?
The Honourable Minister of Agriculture.
Well, unfortunately, the size of the facility has nothing to do with health and safety. There's serious concerns across, about cross-contamination from bacteria. We've seen serious health risks posed by improperly testing and proving that you have a safe operating facility to produce products, and especially meat products in the province. And there's a real danger of cross-contamination when you have processing of beef, lamb, and poultry in the same facility. And it's a serious, could be a potentially serious health risk. And indeed, the individuals that are doing this without the proper certification by the province or the federal government are probably under very serious possibility of a lawsuit if indeed somebody gets ill or dies.
The Honourable Member for Pictou East.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, my question is for the Minister of Natural Resources. Mr. Minister, your department put a damper on entrepreneurship at Melmurby Beach this summer. It denied Jacinta Bennett and her business, Jiggy Java, the opportunity to become a mobile food vendor. Jacinta sent her application to the department in January, and she waited 6 months, before she received a 59-page document that she was to fill out. Mr. Speaker, all she wanted to do was sell apples, bananas, and a few other snacks like Gatorade at Mel Murby Beach. Talk about red tape. My question for the minister is, why the six-month delay, and why a 59-page document to consider opening Jiggy Java?
The Honourable Minister of Natural Resources.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. Just to clarify, there wasn't a six-month delay in the response to this application. This particular person in question sent a proposal in months in advance before a request for proposal was initiated. As the member would know, we have to have a fair, accountable, transparent process when it comes to tendering in this province, Mr. Speaker. And that process was open for 2 weeks. We received responses. This particular applicant did not meet the criteria as outlined by the department. However, Mr. Speaker, our staff did indicate with her they would sit down and go over that process and better prepare her for the next round of RFPs.
The Honourable Member for Pictou East on his first supplementary.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. And I think the member would know that it was her proposal, that she took the initiative. She came up with the idea. She took the initiative to send a proposal to the department. And that proposal was met with nothing for 3 months before the minister got involved at my request, and which was ultimately followed up by an RFP 2 months later. So the 6 months was a result of her taking a step in which she was shut down. Mr. Speaker, more than 17,000 Nova Scotians left our province in the past year. Why does the government want to make it so difficult for individuals wanting to make a living stay in Nova Scotia? We have Jacinta, we have Rhonda sitting in the gallery tonight. How can a person who simply wanted to sell healthy snack food and submitted a proposal, took the initiative, how can that person be asked to fill out a 59-page document to then be told that she doesn't meet the criteria? That's just silly, and I want to know what the minister thinks about that.
The Honourable Minister of Natural Resources.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. In fact, our department sent out requests for proposals for food vendors on various parks during that time. It wasn't at this particular request. There were other vendors who did provide successful bids through that process, Mr. Speaker, and that speaks to me that the process does work. We do have successful applicants. In this particular case, the applicant did not meet the criteria as outlined by the department. However, the department has indicated to her they would sit down with her, and this might have happened already, to go over that process and to better prepare the applicant for the next round of RFPs that are initiated.
The Honourable Member for Pictou East on his final supplementary.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I do thank the Minister for that answer, and I hope the Minister can understand the point I'm trying to make about government bureaucracy and red tape. Surely this is not a situation that the Minister would want to see happen again in his department, so I do appreciate that he is standing up defending his department's actions, but what I think we'd rather see as Nova Scotians is we want to know that this isn't going to happen again. So I would ask the Minister, has he taken any action to change the procedures in his department to make sure that something like this doesn't happen again, where somebody submits the proposal to them and it sits unresponded to for 3 months?
The Honourable Minister of Natural Resources.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Just to clarify, the RFP process was 2 weeks. That it was open. We received applications throughout the, or bids throughout those 2 weeks, and we responded in a very timely manner after. It was not 3 months, as the member has indicated.
The Honourable Member for Hants West.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, my question... Thank you. Mr. Speaker, my question through you is to the Minister of Health and Wellness. Mr. Speaker, over the years, governments have made investments in early intensive behavioral program, more commonly known as EIBI. I also know that the Minister of Health is very familiar with this program and some of the ongoing challenges of parents, including wait times for assessments. Mr. Speaker, I've written the Minister, and I thank him for his responses each time, but I also want to ask a couple of follow-up questions this evening. The Minister stated in a recent response, for children who are starting school in September 2014, there are no children who will age out before receiving EIBI. Having said that, there are families who have decided to delay school entry in order to ensure their children receive treatment. My question to the Minister, Mr. Speaker, through you, can the Minister tell us how many families are waiting to access this program, and how many have made the decision to delay their child starting school this fall?
The Honourable Minister of Health.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker, and I want to first of all say to the member opposite, member for Hants West, that he has brought this issue to my attention as he advocated for a family in particular who had a child whose parents wanted them to be in school this September and they hadn't received EIBI. One of the realities that is facing us in the province, where we now have 1 in 64 children who are diagnosed somewhere on the autism spectrum that require EIBI before going to school, we're now in the area of about 150 children who are waiting to receive EIBI. Some are in that final year now before they would go to school. Every attempt is going to be made to have those children receive EIBI. A number of developments along with the rise in children being diagnosed is the fact that we probably need more therapists in the province. We also have had an occasion last year where I think about 4 therapists went out on pregnancy leave all at the same time, which really put us behind. But we are now gathering a group of the experts from across the province to outline a stronger plan for the future.
The Honourable Member for Hants West on his first supplementary.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and I thank the Minister for his answer. Given the number of families and children affected by this wait time issue, does the Minister have any data that would indicate what kind of positive or negative effects these delays have on those children who are kept back a year?
The Honourable Minister of Health.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker, and to the member opposite. That is a very good question. We know that we've been only providing EIB in the province, and we're actually very, very strongly and very much better off than many provinces across the country in terms of delivering this. That's a question that that really asks, have any longitudinal studies been done to determine that if a child with autism is out of school for a year in order to get the program? That's a great question. We now have we're going to have a small, at least, group to take a look at to see, in fact, if it is deleterious to the advance of the child in school, and we'll be gathering information around that. We have just put in place about 11 people who will outline now how the program should be delivered in the future. One of the real challenges that we are getting is that now diagnosis of autism is actually taking place between 1 and 2 years of age. Again, another great advance because early work with a therapist, also training parents who can pick up the program, I believe is again some of the work now that we need to incorporate in our future planning.
The Honourable Member for Hants West on his final supplementary.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, I know, and I believe many of the parents understand, the issue of money and resources, and unfortunately that always seems to be the case in many fronts. So I would ask the Minister, and I know the Minister understands as well, he's spent a long time in this House as critic and certainly now as Minister, some of the challenges that exist. Mr. Speaker, my final question through you to the Minister, will there be any additional resources in the coming budget to assist these families in the ongoing challenges in the EIBI program?
The Honourable Minister of Health.
Thank you very much, and to the member from Hants West. This is exactly what this high-caliber, committed to improving autism support programs in the province will be taking a look at. There is also some new developments in terms of providing assistance prior to going to school, and there are some aspects of the early intervention behavioral therapy that can be provided at a lower cost and also have very effective results. We're now into that period. Will we study this? And hopefully a recommendation before budget could be made in the coming year.
The Honourable Leader of the New Democratic Party.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, my question through you is to the Premier. Mr. Speaker, for the past 18 and a half hours or so, we've had quite a number of presenters at our Law Amendments Committee. And, Mr. Speaker, one of the presenters was Alexis Allen, a well-respected teacher and former president of the Nova Scotia Teachers Union. And she told the Law Amendments Committee that when Stephen Harper had come to government, he essentially said that he hoped that in a few years people wouldn't be able to recognize Canada. And Mr. Speaker, she said that she was very worried that in a few years she would not be able to recognize Nova Scotia. So my question to the Premier is this. Why is the Premier so determined to erode the hard-won rights of people working in the healthcare system in Nova Scotia?
The Honourable Premier.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I want to assure the Honourable Member that the hard-earned rights and benefits that workers across this province will not be affected under this bill, Mr. Speaker. And, Mr. Speaker, one of the reasons why the Alexis Allen may not recognize Nova Scotia, Mr. Speaker, is this government is reinvesting in public education. Well, she sat silently while that government cut from it.
The Honourable Leader of the New Democratic Party on her first supplementary.
Well, Mr. Speaker, one of the last presenters at Law Amendments was a staff worker for one of the healthcare unions, a person who's been representing laundry workers, cafeteria, and maintenance workers. These, as we know, are the lowest paid workers in our healthcare system, and the system can't run effectively without the work they do, Mr. Speaker. These workers are very concerned that this Liberal government is coming after them next with the privatization of the work they do. So, Mr. Speaker, my question to the Premier is this. Will you reassure these workers that you're not coming after them next?
The Honourable Premier.
Mr. Speaker, this piece of legislation actually, Mr. Speaker, provides workers in this province with more opportunity, Mr. Speaker. Healthcare workers who are represented in one health institution on one side of the street can't cross the street to work in another, Mr. Speaker, because they're represented by a different union. It absolutely makes no sense, Mr. Speaker. This is about giving people more opportunity. It's ensuring that the system will be there. Workers, what rights that they've earned will be protected, Mr. Speaker. This is about ensuring the future of the healthcare system in Nova Scotia.
The Honourable Leader of the New Democratic Party on her final supplementary.
It's just not true that workers can't move across the street to work in a different healthcare facility. We literally had hundreds of people in the Red Room who did just that and told us their stories about all of the different settings they had worked in and had been members of different unions in, Mr. Speaker. So I don't know. The Premier doesn't understand how the healthcare system in the province works, obviously. But I have someone who the Premier could meet with, and she could help him understand the system a little better, Mr. Speaker. And one of my previous questions, the Premier would not say whether he would meet with Robin, the nurse who came back to Nova Scotia, who's here tonight in the gallery. So I want to ask the Premier simply, will he or won't he meet with Robin one-on-one, one nurse, one conversation, Mr. Speaker?
The Honourable Premier.
Mr. Speaker, I want to congratulate Robin on coming to Nova Scotia. I want to congratulate her on the great work that she does on behalf of the people of Nova Scotia. Mr. Speaker. But there's one thing that I'm absolutely certain. One of the questions that was asked of her when she wanted a job in Nova Scotia, she wasn't asked what union she wanted to belong to, Mr. Speaker. She was put in a union.
The Honourable Member for Pictou Centre.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, my question is for the Minister of Labour and Advanced Education. Mr. Speaker, the Ivany Report highlighted the need to combat youth unemployment by working to ensure that by 2024, Nova Scotia's youth unemployment rate will be at or better than the national rate. Nationally, the youth unemployment has dropped in the last year. However, in Nova Scotia, it has increased to 18.6%. That represents 13,600 young Nova Scotians, and I'll table that, Mr. Speaker. In the last year, the national unemployment rate among youth has declined, while in Nova Scotia, it has increased. This does not send a good message to our young people about a future in Nova Scotia. My question to the Minister, why is the government sitting on its hands while more and more youth in this province are struggling to find work?
The Honourable Minister of Labour and Advanced Education.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I would actually disagree with the premise of the Honourable Member's question. In fact, we're doing a number of things to help young people. For example, this past summer, the ERDT added 250 summer jobs in rural areas to help Nova Scotian students pay for their studies. We've doubled the money that's gone into the START program and the apprenticeship stream. The Minister of ERDT is about to announce the Graduate to Opportunities program. We have an expansion of co-op opportunities, Mr. Speaker. We are enhancing the apprenticeship program. It's now being led, Mr. Speaker, by industry. And so they've become full partners in this particular process so that we'll have more apprentices hired. Mr. Speaker, what we know is that only 25% of businesses were actually participating in the apprenticeship program, Mr. Speaker. And the reason they weren't getting involved, Mr. Speaker, is because they didn't feel they have a voice. We've given them that. And I'll be happy to give the member more examples in my next answer because I don't want to speak for too long. Thank you.
The Honourable Member for Pictou Centre on his first supplementary.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. The youth unemployment rate in New Brunswick sits well below that of Nova Scotia. While New Brunswick has managed to improve their youth unemployment, Nova Scotia has continued to decline under the watch of this government. At 18.6%, Nova Scotia's youth unemployment rate is not only the highest in Atlantic Canada, it is the highest in the country. My question to the Minister, will the government admit that its inability to produce a plan to attract business and youth has resulted in more and more young Nova Scotians leaving our province to find work?
The Honourable Minister of Labour and Advanced Education.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and if you don't mind, I'll just continue my list. I would like to commend the Minister responsible for the PSE. He has actually moved to remove the three-year experience requirement that previously existed for young people coming into the Public Service Commission. Thing, but it actually means a lot. And I would also like to point out that we have instituted a graduate scholarship program, and that puts between $10,000 and $15,000 into the hands of bright young Nova Scotians who are staying here to study and do research in important areas that are going to make a difference and actually spin off into companies here in Nova Scotia. And then I'll continue with my next answer.
The Honourable Member for Pictou Centre on his final supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, thousands have moved away for work and may not be able to return anytime soon. When a panel of experts advised that developing a new shale gas industry could create up to 1,400 direct jobs, along with spin-off employment, this government said no after just 3 days. And I'll table that, Mr. Speaker. As our young people slowly give up on dreams of living and working here at home, the government states Nova Scotia is closed for business. My question through you, Mr. Speaker, will the government commit to reversing job-killing policies like high taxes, stifling debt, and a lack of business incentives to finally reverse this trend?
The Honourable Minister of Labour and Advanced Education.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and I'd just like to speak a bit right now about our sandbox project. We have four sandbox projects underway right now. They're done by the universities in conjunction, in some cases, with NSCC. It's a collaborative effort among the universities. They're working with entrepreneurs and other smart people to get them together so that you have bright young people who have ideas, be they in IT or in other priority areas like the oil and gas industry, to work with entrepreneurs who have experience to come up with jobs for our young people for the future, Mr. Speaker. I realize that we're all impatient. We'd like to have the jobs here overnight, but we're on our way. Thank you.
The Honourable Member for Kings North.
Mr. Speaker, my question is for the Minister of Natural Resources. Mr. Speaker, on his recent expensive trip to... Pardon me, Mr. Speaker, that was yesterday's question. Mr. Speaker, the mining industry in Nova Scotia operates under oppressive mineral exploration fees. John Whiteman, the Executive Director of Nova Scotia Prospectors Association, in an April 11th news release said, "The harm being caused to the industry by the fee increase is completely disproportional to the small amount of revenue being generated to the government." And I will table that. The Global Mining Survey of Mining Executives released in March clearly showed Nova Scotia to be one of the least attractive jurisdictions in this country, and the executives blamed provincial government policies for that reason. I'll also table that information, Mr. Speaker. My question to the Minister is this: what are the government's intentions to improve mining in Nova Scotia and to improve the outlook for global mining executives?
Honourable Minister of Natural Resources.
Mr. Speaker, I'm happy to say that for the first time in a generation in this province, our government is actually reviewing our Mineral Resources Act, all the regulations surrounding the mining sector, including royalties, fees, everything that impacts that sector, Mr. Speaker, and we're going to do it to ensure that there's regulatory certainty here in Nova Scotia so we can be a competitive jurisdiction and attract those great companies to our shores.
The Honourable Member for Kings North on his first supplementary.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'd like to thank the Minister for that answer. Mr. Speaker, 2013 Government Commission study of Nova Scotia's mining, quarry and industry found that the industry lost 800 jobs and $80 million in annual economic activity in the past 5 years. And the Ivanhoe Commission report highlights the need to provide a modern, responsive legislative framework to support and promote sustainable mineral resource management. I understand the Minister says he's going to be working on that. What will the Minister tell us whether they will remove the excise fuel tax?
The Honourable Minister of Natural Resources.
Mr. Speaker, I think our Minister of Finance has already made that commitment to the industry that we will be moving forward with that campaign commitment.
The Honourable Member for Kings North on his final supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, in 2013, fee hikes cost prospectors 53% more here in Nova Scotia than in New Brunswick, and an incredible 621% more than in Newfoundland. And I have that in a table to stop. That's in table one, which I already gave the page. Mr. Speaker, the Executive Director of the Mining Association in Nova Scotia said many prospectors are simply giving up their claims because they cannot afford them. Will this government commit to reducing these fees?
The Honourable Minister of Natural Resources.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. What we have done is actually modernize the fee-staking claims process. Before, we had a paper-based process, Mr. Speaker, whereby prospectors would have to come to Halifax and submit those claims. We are now bringing our department into the 21st century, Mr. Speaker, with a state-of-the-art, modern system that is going to improve our ability to serve those prospectors in this province, Mr. Speaker. And I'm happy to say that we're doing it while keeping all of those fees associated with getting claims and maintaining claims competitive with all surrounding jurisdictions.
Going into the home stretch, the Honourable Member for Pictou West.
Thank goodness. Thank you, Mr. Speaker. My question through you is to the Minister of Economic and Rural Development. This government is approaching their one-year mark. 1 year after they promised to put Nova Scotians first. Unfortunately, thousands of Nova Scotians are left wondering when they can expect delivery on this promise. Latest Statistics Canada figures indicate that Nova Scotia has 9,000 fewer jobs within this past year, and I will table that document. My question is, why do Nova Scotians continue to see job losses rather than job growth?
The Honourable Minister of Economic and Rural Development and Tourism.
Mr. Speaker, we are elected on a platform to take the decision-making around investments on behalf of Nova Scotians to economic development out of the cabinet room and back into the hands of private industry at arm's length of government to make those investment decisions on our behalf. Mr. Speaker, NSBI has been making very strategic investments through its payroll rebate system, which will provide some very exciting opportunities both for Nova Scotia companies to grow as well as new companies who will be moving into our province to create jobs right here.
The Honourable Member for Pictou West on her first supplementary.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. The Nova Scotia Department of Finance has indicated that only one region of Nova Scotia has grown since this Liberal government came to power, and I've tabled that document. The Ivany Commission told Nova Scotians that it is now or never to turn around our economy. The Liberal government's inability to create jobs and produce a comprehensive job strategy highlights its incompetence. While thousands and thousands of Nova Scotians lose their jobs, why has the government sat idly by and done nothing?
The Honourable Minister of Economic and Rural Development and Tourism.
Well, Mr. Speaker, nothing could be further from the truth, but Nova Scotians have clearly sent a message that they expect private industry to be able to lead economic growth in this province. And the days of... And that the days of the Cabinet deciding which companies would be the winners and losers were going to come to an end, and that has happened under us. Mr. Speaker, one area of the province which has faced some economic challenges that we've been addressing has been in Pictou County. And, Mr. Speaker, the message that we're getting from business leaders and others in Pictou County is that the biggest hindrance to economic development in that area is none other than the members from Pictou West and Pictou East.
The Honourable Member for Pictou West on our final supplementary.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. I should take the high road on this, but I don't know how the Minister knows that when he's been to Pictou a couple times and hasn't even stopped into the Tourist Bureau there. In 2014, the year-to-date figures include that Nova Scotia had the highest job loss in the Maritime provinces, and I've tabled that. The province's fiscal situation worsened under their watch while the Liberals remained committed to job-killing policies such as high taxes and banning an entire industry. The Liberal government has wasted its first year in power and the economy and citizens are paying the price. Having failed to create jobs, will the government produce a comprehensive, immediate job creation plan for Nova Scotia before one more job is lost?
Honourable Minister of Economic Development.
When we heard about the challenges facing Pictou County, we went down four ministers to meet with the community, meet with municipal leaders, and we decided rather than have someone from Halifax or elsewhere go down and tell Pictou County what was good for economic growth in their area, we instead asked Sean Murray from Advocate Publishing to lead a group and to find out what would be the best solutions for Pictou County with a Made in Pictou solution. And Mr. Speaker, what he has found, and one of the challenges that he's hearing from business leaders, is that while they all have great ideas, they're reluctant to come forward because they know the minute they come forward with any ideas for Pictou County, they'll have scorn heaped on them by the members from Pictou West and Pictou East.
Honourable Member for Hants West.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Order, please. The Honourable Member for Hants West.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'll take the opportunity to ask the question. I appreciate the opportunity. Mr. Speaker, my question through you is to the Minister of Service, Nova Scotia, Municipal Relations. Mr. Speaker, the Minister would know that in the town of Windsor, an area that I represent, we have an excess Nova Scotia there, that has been open for some time now. It's open 2 half-days a week, 4 hours Tuesdays and Thursdays. We have a considerable number of people who have come to my office over the years, and I've asked the last number of governments, I think probably including our own at the time when I came here, to assess or reassess that location for potentially expanding the hours there. And I would ask the minister, is there any data that supports
order,
that?
Order, please. The honourable member for Hants West has the floor.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I appreciate that. I would ask the honourable minister, is there data that would be available to support one way or the other it staying as is, or the potential for another half day or day as it currently exists?
The honourable minister of Service, Nova Scotia.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and I thank my colleague for the question. We are presently in the process of a facility strategy where we're assessing client use of facilities across the province. And I don't have the data specific to the Windsor Access Facility with me, but I would be more than willing to provide that information to my colleague at an appropriate time that's convenient for him.
The honourable member for Hants West on his first supplementary.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and I appreciate the answer. And I've been told that the data is somewhere. It was calculated at some point back a while ago. It was gathered. I'm not sure where it is. I haven't FOIPopped, but I think I have written in the past. Probably if I had thought about it, I would have brought that information with me this evening with regards to the letters that I have written, Mr. Speaker, to indicate that this has been an ongoing issue. And many, many people, not just one or two, but many people over the years have came in to my office to ask about this and the potential for it being extended. We have to drive, unfortunately, either into Sackville or Halifax, Mr. Speaker, or to Colebrook. They've got a lovely new location in Colebrook. I was there. I took my daughter there back a few months ago to get her license, and we had to go to Colebrook because of the day. And, of course, when you pass the test, they want to run right down these days and get their license. So, albeit a lovely location, there were very few people there. I was quite surprised and thought, here we are again. The two or three of the people that were there were actually from my constituency. So, again, I would ask or appreciate the opportunity to have the question asked, and I know we're running out of time. And I would thank the minister if he could provide some information to myself that I could share with others.
Order,
and,
please. Time allotted for oral questions has expired. We'll now move on to bills. Oh, the Honourable Government House Leader.
Speaker, with unanimous consent to the House, could we revert back to a daily routine government notices of motion?
Do we have unanimous consent to revert back? The Honourable Minister of Health.
Oh, it's wonderful to have friends in this place. I hereby give notice that on a future day I shall move the adoption of the following resolution.